Welcome to Behind the Game, the Kids in the Game official podcast, where we cover the intersection of youth development, sports, education, and technology in the New York City landscape.
Welcome, everybody, to Behind the Game, Kids in the Game's official podcast. This is Paul O'Connor. Welcome to episode 16. On this episode, we are joined by Jason Perez. He is the Athletics, Health, and Wellness Coordinator at Dream Charter School. Great episode. Really appreciate Jason coming on. Our first Harlem pizza stop as well, which is exciting. Without further ado, let's get into it. Okay, we are now joined by Jason Perez. He is the Athletics, Health, and Wellness Coordinator at Dream Charter School, formerly Harlem RBI, for people here in New York or people that knew about it. Jason, welcome to the office. Thanks for coming down, man. We appreciate it.
No, absolutely. I love getting to speak with folks, kind of tell my story, tell all the work that we do. So this is super, super, super exciting for me.
Awesome. Okay, so we're going to dive in. I want to talk about you and your background and your experience and, you know, how and why you got into this space. You know, I know you went to Baruch and then Adelphi, and that's how you know Amanda. Let's go all the way back to Baruch, where you grew up, maybe even before Baruch, where you grew up and all that stuff.
Yeah, I definitely want to start before Baruch. I think I want to start, like, when I was 4 or 5 years old, maybe. My work with sport has started very early on when I was 4 years old. My dad introduced me to, the sport of baseball. And it's something I didn't even want to do. I actually hated going out to play. But as I continued through the sport, I realized, like, that's something that I wanted to stick around. And through that, just kind of went through middle school, played middle school ball, and then, of course, went into high school, played some high school ball. So sport was always something that was a part of me, early on, before I knew what a glove and a bat and a baseball was. But through that, I was actually a participant of Harlem RBI. I grew up in East Harlem. I actually grew up just a few blocks away from their main office. And at the time, you know, the school wasn't there. We didn't have that beautiful field that's there now. We kind of had just like this big open dirt lot. And that's where, you know, I started to play a little bit more baseball, meet some folks in the neighborhood and met some of my best friends there. And I stuck with the program for a while, right? So I started in third grade, fourth grade with them, and I just continued on. It was something that I just couldn't get away from. Went through their middle school programming, their high school programming, graduated from the program, and went back as a legend, so essentially like our alumni program. And they provide opportunities for youth students in college. Just providing support, career readiness, kind of like just different workshops. So I stuck around for a while, and it was just something that I didn't realize at the time would be my profession, and didn't even realize that there was a world for it. Mm-hmm. At my time there, I was a high school coach, but also a high school umpire, working for the same program that I was in third and fourth grade. So that's kind of cool to see how, you know, our youth in high school are sticking around and helping our kids in middle and elementary school. And I didn't necessarily realize that that was a field. When I went into Baruch, I studied psych, and then more particularly with the youth development lens. Played a little ball there. Unfortunately, injury kind of like stopped my career, but I still wanted to stick around, so I did a lot of coaching. And then I got introduced to the Adelphi program. We actually had an intern who was working with us, who was at the Adelphi program. That wasn't the fellowship. The fellowship was actually started the first year that I was there. Just connected with folks there. Meredith Whitley was there, and just kind of fell in my lap. And I didn't realize that sport-based youth development was an area of thought, like, or an option, right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to see that there's just so much going on in the space, and just like knowing that it was a space for me to be a part of was just a no-brainer. Just figuring out how to continue to work with youth at the same time as continuing to work in sport. And I just felt like that program was the perfect bridge for the two worlds that I wanted to be a part of. That's essentially where I started. Love of sport, love of the field, bringing it together, and now really deep in the sport-based youth development world with Dream.
That's awesome. I appreciate you sharing that. So when you went to school there, did they just share a space with another building? I mean, how did it look? I mean, for people that don't know, you know, you guys have one of the best buildings in New York right now. So I can imagine you seeing that change would be pretty ridiculous throughout your lifetime.
No, yeah, it's super huge. So I actually didn't go to school at Dream. Dream Charter School wasn't a thing just yet when I was a part of the program. It was just our Real Kids program, so our elementary school program, and they were starting to build out the middle school and the high school program.
Got it.
So Dream started as Harlem RBI, and it was a community-based program. So kids from the neighborhood would come in from different schools and come together for at least 4 days a week. There were some weeks where there were 5 days a week. You know, so I started as a elementary school participant for their summer program. It was a six-week program. They did some reading in the mornings and then did baseball all afternoon. At that point, we were sharing space at a local school right there in the area, and that's where all of the summer programming was happening. We also had a small office space, again, in the same neighborhood, and that was where our middle school program was happening, and they met in that space. But where we are now to where we started was completely different. We started super small. As I mentioned, the field that's there now wasn't there when I was growing up. It was mm-hmm. just a big, huge, like, dirt lot. But, you know, we made it work. That's where all of our games are happening. That's where we had all our summer events, so like our exhibition day. We had our championship day, so kind of like we get carnival games out there. Families come in. The communities invited to participate. So that's where that started. And where we're at now, you know, the building we are now opened up, I believe it was 10, 11 years ago. I mean, it happened so quickly.
Yeah.
Well, the school itself opened up 10, 11 years ago, and our building was a little bit after that.
Got it.
And that's where all of our K through 8 are at right now. But before then, we shared space with the public school right next door. So again, starting really small in certain spaces and different buildings and growing to where we are now, with our central hub in East Harlem, where our K through 8 is at, and then being for after school programs in a few different public schools around the neighborhood and also in the South Bronx. We're still doing that element because that's essentially our premier program. Most of our families want their kids in that program. So we have that program, elementary school, Real Kids, in our building and in two other buildings very nearby us, and then we have one in the South Bronx as well.
Got it.
So yeah, starting from small office space, shared space in schools, to now having our own spaces. Yeah, I mean that's and I've seen the change all across the board.
Mm-hmm.
You know, seeing just having that field being available to the kids now, seeing the building open up, just seeing like all the opportunities that they had, you know, that I did have, but now at a grander scale.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that the kids have that opportunity to see newer and better things as we continue to scale out and grow.
And was this always the idea? I mean, you know, people can have a vision for a ton of things, but was it always the idea to open a school, or did it happen organically, naturally, you know?
So it was never the idea. So, I mean, the idea just started as a baseball program, right?
Mm-hmm.
So a bunch of volunteers came in and just wanted to have opportunities for kids in the neighborhood to play baseball.
Yep.
And they did that for a little bit, and it was really well received. A lot of kids came in, families wanted to come in. And then a group of girls in the neighborhood approached us and told essentially Rich Berlin, who's now our ED, that, you know, the girls want to play too. And that's where our softball program kind of, you know, came into fruition, and they did similar things to the baseball side. Just like the baseball softball components, practices, games, things of that nature. And then the organization realized, well, we only have them for the summer, but where do they go during the school year? And that's where the after-school program, you know, developed and grew. And as he went through the 6th, 7th, and 8th, went on to high school, again, the organization realized, well, what are they doing now in high school? They're not with us. They've, you know, graduated from our program. So the high school program grew. So that community-based program kind of grew and continue to grow. And then the big idea of, well, we have opportunity, we have spaces for our kids to come for after school programming, but are they really getting the best possible education they could in the schools that are in the neighborhood? And that's where the idea of Dream Charter School came about. And now we're at, just kind of in, going through my head right now, we have K to 8 in East Harlem. We have 9th through 11th in East Harlem. We opened up our high school 3 years ago. So we'll have our first graduating class next year. We just opened up a school this past August in Mott Haven. So they're kindergarten right now. And then the idea is to have an additional school in another area of the South Bronx in 2021, 2022.
Got it.
So we are just popping schools out left and right. And we're super excited that our school in Mott Haven right now, plus our high school, are going to come together in one building in the South Bronx. It's, I don't know if I want to say where it's at exactly right now. I don't know if I can share that information, we are going to be, we're going to have a huge new building, and we're going to have K to 12 in that one space, and that's going to be kind of like the new big thing that we haven't seen yet, having K through 12 all in one building.
Yeah. That's got to be a big building.
It's massive.
Yeah.
It's huge. You know, and I'm selfishly excited because that just means another gym for me. It also means like a regulation high school gym, because right now high school kids are, you know, playing in the middle school gym. So I'm super excited to see a brand new space, locker rooms, weight room, all of that stuff.
It's gonna be great.
I'm here smiling my behind off because I'm just super excited for that. We started as a summer baseball softball rec to schools in East Harlem and the South Bronx.
So you alluded to it, but one of the questions I wanted to talk about was you guys opening that new location. Is this the plan? I mean, are you guys going to continue to open as many schools as you can throughout New York? Is there a plan to leave New York, or is it strictly here? Or maybe we don't know.
I think the plan is to continue to open schools. I mean, that's just my thought. I think, you know, over the course of 26 years, 27 years, maybe even a little more than that, we've just tried to find different ways to grow and provide more opportunity. So I think schools maybe outside of New York. We are actually outside of New York. We have our Real Kids program in Newark, New Jersey. And that's just summer programming right now.
Got it.
But we use that program to kind of spearhead, you know, different locations of where we want to see, right? So in our South Bronx location, the reason why we built that school there was because we started with our Real Kids program, kind of got feedback from the community, see whether or not, you know, they liked us.
Yep.
And then we realized that once there was enough interest, you know, we decided to then continue on and build schools. And similarly to how we did in East Harlem, we started with Real Kids, got the feedback from the community, and then continue to grow. So
got it.
Based on trends in East Harlem and in the South Bronx, I wouldn't be surprised to see if we then create some kind of school or bigger programs and opportunities in Newark.
Yep.
But yeah, we'll see.
Got it.
We'll see.
Awesome. So you alluded to in the beginning, you've started as a participant, you've kind of done a little bit of everything growing up within the organization and now in the school. So I guess the question now is, what does your role look like today more? You know, obviously you've gone from the kid in the program to where you are now. So tell us a little bit more about what your day-to-day within the organization looks like and your specific role.
Cool. So I'm on the Athletics Health and Wellness team. We're a team of 5-6 right now. And essentially we work with every single participant of each and every one of our schools and our after-school programs. So my role specifically is around all of our sporting opportunities from kindergarten up through to now 11th grade. So I manage what we call our outside sports program. So once a week, all of our elementary school students, K to 5, on Fridays, they will participate in some kind of sporting opportunity. And it'll change every year that they're in our school event. So right now, our K-1, we have yoga, but we have two different organizations doing the yoga there. In second grade, we have swimming, so we partnered up with Asphalt Green and send our second graders over there to do swimming. We've partnered up with Harlem Junior Tennis for our third grade students, partnered up with Beat the Streets for our fourth grade students, and our fifth grade students, what is fifth grade doing?
Hopefully kids in the game in esports.
It would be, yes, and I know we've talked about that. We'd love to chat about that. But fifth grade, actually, yeah, we partnered with America Scores this year to do some soccer program. That's something that we actually don't have as a sport right now. Which
you don't have soccer.
We don't have soccer as a team. So the hope is that, you know, them being a part of our outside sports program and the kids kind of getting their first taste of it, I think this could become something where we start developing teams and have them participate, you know, more competitively. So that's the elementary school portion. And then 6th through 12th, essentially, well, 11th, because we're not 12th yet.
Yep.
My role essentially functions as an athletic director, right? So there are 7 teams in the middle school, and we have 9 to 10 in the high school.
You guys are in the charter school league?
Yeah, we're in the charter school athletic league, yeah. So we compete against other charter schools here in New York City. So we'll see teams from the Bronx, from East Harlem, Queens, Brooklyn. We haven't seen a Staten Island school yet. I don't know if there's charters in Staten Island, but... we're in the Charter School Athletic League, so I manage all of those teams. They're all coaches there, and kind of just creating, you know, team culture and just making sure that, you know, our coaches are setting the right standard, you know, collecting practice plans and just kind of going in and observing coaches, doing some, like, observations, things of that nature. So like I said previously, just functioning as an athletic director for our middle school and our high school teams.
Got it.
You know, as we continue to grow, we're going to continue to add more teams. So the hope is next year for high school, we'll add another 3 to 4 teams, hopefully. In the middle school, we're going to definitely add soccer because that's something that there's just so much interest in the school. And you know, this is my now 3rd year in the role. So obviously taking each year to kind of, you know, bring in something new.
Sure.
That's one of the new things that I definitely want to bring.
Nice.
So that's the school year. And then over the summer, I manage all of the sporting opportunities for our after-school program for Dream students particularly.
Okay.
So they have a summer camp called Dream University. So what we'll do is our middle school students will go to a university. So last year was at BMCC, BCC. The year before that, we were at Manhattan College.
Got it.
So in the morning, they'll sit in, you know, college classes, and they'll take... I mean, well, they'll still be doing kind of like math, language arts, a lot of health stuff that they need that can help them through their school year when that approaching year comes.
Mm-hmm.
But they get to sit in a college class. They get to be on a college campus. They do that in the morning. And then in the afternoons, they do athletics and kind of like movement and physical fitness. So that's what I manage. So I have
Is that at the college too, or do they come back?
Yeah, so that'll be at the college as well.
Very cool.
At Manhattan College, we use their big turf space. So that was super exciting for them to see. Last year, we used the BCC's gym, but we also have a partnership with MLB and Parks Department, where we have to use Roberto Clemente State Park in the Bronx.
Yeah.
So we have their facilities at our disposal to use for summer programming and also for some of our academy stuff that I didn't mention earlier, and doing like games and practices and stuff like that out there. So
very cool.
That's what I do over the summer. So from, you know, that's kind of like my scope of work.
Yeah.
As I transition from school year to not school year.
Yeah. So not busy at all.
Not at all. You know, I always make fun of people at work. Like, I don't like, how do I take vacation? Like,
I just don't know
when
it's
the
a tough
right
deal
to
take
it.
Vacation.
And it's so tough. Like teachers, they can do it because they have the breaks.
Summer. Yeah, yeah.
But those breaks are my time to like really develop things, right?
So, yep.
Because I don't
yep.
have to deal with
summer's
kids running around everywhere and, mm-hmm. and teachers not necessarily like emailing. Like my inbox is super, super slow. So,
yep.
So, you know, not busy at all.
Yeah. I want to talk about the recent Giving Tuesday campaign you guys did called This Kid Can campaign. Mm-hmm. How did that come about? What's the messaging and meaning behind that? Because it's, you know, it's super important, but I'll let you kind of explain it through.
No, right. Yes. Yeah. So recently, actually, within the last year and a half, we created what we call Maxim. So they're essentially like our values. You know, and the reason why we did that is because, you know, the organization has gone through some change. So for a while we had our community-based programming and also like our school kind of, you know, functioning as their own. So we were trying to figure out ways to align. So we did that through creating Maxims where like we're getting the best of both worlds. So like This Kid Can is one of our Maxims, and I think it just embodies the idea that every kid has potential, mm-hmm. and they have the potential to do whatever it is that they want to do, and that's something that I really, you know, stuck to the most of all of our maxims, because again, it's just a reflection of me as a kid growing through the program and, you know, sticking around and being a model for the kids to let them know, like, listen, you're a part of something that you can continue to be a part of as you grow through this process and as you grow through the organization. You know, it's tough. You know, it's you know, I'm from East Harlem. You know, it's not as bad as people make it to believe. But I think the idea of East Harlem being an area where, you know, there's a lot of at-risk youth, because there definitely are. A lot of our kids come from, you know, single-parent homes.
Yep.
You know, we live in a food desert. So in that, you know, in that respect, it's tough for kids to kind of latch on to the idea that they can do something and they can be more than what they are and what they're in. So I think that this kid can, Maxim really embodies like the idea that they can do that and they can get out of it. And what's super cool is that my team currently, of the five of us, three of us went through the program at different moments.
So, super important. Yeah,
so, yeah. You know, my colleague Jason Polanco, he was part of the first group that came
that ever went through it.
That came through in 1991. He was the first participant. Then my second colleague Robert Saltares, he came in a few years after him and saw a little bit more than what JP saw. Yep. So JP got a chance to see kind of like full growth.
Yeah.
Robert came in and saw, you know, a new evolved program that Polanco didn't necessarily like went through.
Yep.
And then I came in 2003, I think it was. So I think it's just super important for the kids to see, like, listen, these three guys are working together, bringing these opportunities that, you know, weren't necessarily there.
Mm-hmm.
And they took that you know, that knowledge and that institutional knowledge and their experiences to create something for you. So together, like, we're showing the kids that, you know, us as kids were able to do it because we went through it and we didn't have everything that they had now. So to be able to go through all of that change and grow in different, you know, points in East Harlem where, you know, that block where it evolved was essentially dubbed like the worst block in East Harlem to where it's at now with our field there, with the school there.
Yeah.
Like things can happen and it's just a matter of them realizing that they have that potential to do so.
You've seen it. I'm sure, you know, it'll be different. I'm positive youth sports will be different in 10 years, 15 years, 20 years. But how has the landscape of youth sports changed since, you know, you grew up to now?
Right. I don't know. I always think of two sides of it, right? Because I think, you know, for me growing up, the opportunities to play rec ball were super huge. I think there were, you know, little leagues everywhere. And I think now it's evolved to the point where everything is super, like, elite travel ball, pay to play. And I think a lot of, you know, our little leagues, you know, the neighborhood in particular, like East Harlem Little League does no longer exist. So it's like, where do these kids go, right? So you have other organizations that are around that are you know, charging kids to play. And I think that's where, I mean, the landscape of sport has changed.
Yep.
So, you know, we very much began as, you know, rec ball, providing opportunity for kids in the community.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we're phasing out of that and becoming exclusively a charter school. But we still want to, you know, embody how we started. So creating those opportunities for kids to play is super important to us. So I think that's where that landscape, at least in particular in East Harlem, has changed, where, you know, being able to just have a space to play without having any kind of financial, you know, commitments to it.
It's basically shifted.
It's shifted.
It's completely changed because I think even, you know, I'm 30, so growing up, you know, I'm a basketball guy. So specifically for that, there was three camps that you would go to. Five-star, Eastern Invitational, ABCD camp. And that was for the top 1%, and that was it. But everyone else had unlimited options. You had your local town camp. You had your college camp. You had a regional camp. You could leave. You could go, you know, I grew up in Connecticut. You could go to Syracuse. You could go wherever. So there was unlimited rec programs for all the sports. There was community programs, and the top 1% per se of an athlete had limited options. And to your point, that has now switched. CYO diminishing. Your local, you know, my town's called Trumbull. Your Trumbull travel basketball team that played like three neighboring towns. It wasn't travel. I mean, you literally went one town over. Diminishing, and now it's, you know, staying on basketball. Elite AAU teams that are going all across the country at age 10, which you have you don't need to do. It's I could go on for days, but I agree with your assessment that those two things have now switched. And I think we have to get back to a point where groups or organizations or a lot of the onus is now getting put on MLB, NBA, NFL, like you guys got all the resources. You have to kind of take control of the landscape, and whether that means direct funds funneling down or you guys sending out guidelines, whatever it is, I think that's now where, like, we're all kind of looking up, like, hey, we can't be the ones that fix the problems for everyone. So I agree with you.
No, I think it just becomes this collaborative effort that organizations need to and like you said it perfectly, kind of look up, you know. And I think part of our collaboration with MLB is to do just that. The way we have spun it, though, is like we made that kind of like our elite kind of baseball academy, because we know that here in New York City, in East Harlem, in the Bronx, in Brooklyn, you have these teams that are out there that are, you know, elite travel programs that are at a significant cost. So we're just trying to find ways to be a part of that while still, you know, not essentially charging our kids to do that.
It's hard.
You know, and we've done some good work bringing kids in from all across the city to be a part of that. And the hope is that, you know, there are a lot of other organizations that if they continue to look up and ask for support, we can continue to build these programs like that.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, so that kind of leads us into the next question. So you talk about how opportunity is sometimes a challenge, especially now, like for that level of athlete. But when you think about youth sports as a whole, from, I mean, you've participated in community organizations, you've played competitively in high school and college. So you think about the whole scope of it, you know, what do you think the biggest challenge is that faces just the field in general and the culture behind youth sports? What do you see as the hardest thing that smaller organizations and larger organizations have to overcome?
It's not an easy question.
Yeah, it's not an easy question. Like, there's so many different things I could think of. And it comes with, like, whatever level that it's at, right? So I think the toughest thing is that there isn't necessarily a guideline for coaches to be coaches, right? I think there needs to be some kind of like governing body or some kind of like certifications or something of that sort, where we know that every coach in New York City, in order to be able to coach any kind of team, like they have to be a part of this kind of like process or this kind of like certification program or something, because you're gonna get some really bad coaches, and it happens. And
it affects the kids, it affects the coaches, the parents, the culture.
It just trickles. I don't think it just trickles down, but it trickles like across and then it just goes back up. I mean, and it's just, I think the coaches are the biggest representation of whatever organization as a whole, right? Because they're the ones that are seeing our kids constantly. They're the ones that are seeing families constantly. When they travel and they go to other schools, they're seeing other schools, other coaches, and I think that there just needs to be a standard in place where we can say that this coach is a legitimate coach. I think that's what the biggest thing that happens. And then if you have coaches that start so young, well, with the youngest group, right? So if you have a, you know, 8-9-year-old that has a terrible coach, that kid doesn't want to play sport now.
Yeah, so the percentage of dropout.
And then that kid just doesn't get a chance to experience something that, you know, his friend who has a different coach may have been able to experience. Like, you know, I'm preaching to the choir here, where it's like we understand how important sport can be, you know, for anybody's life. You know, just little things that you can learn through the sport that I don't even think like you can learn in classrooms and things of that nature. There's something about being in a gym, being on the field, being with your teammates, that just teaches you things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think, yeah.
No. I think it's a direct correlation of a lot of people say now there's the opportunity to play sports is everywhere now. Like,
right.
There was one team to play for where I grew up. One. And you had to be good to make it. And if not, there was still a rec type league, or you could go play with your friends, but there was one. Now there's a million. I mean, you could go play anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem, is we exploded in offerings and opportunity without thinking who's actually coaching these kids. Like, and there's no, you know, some of the leagues do try, you know, NBA has a partnership with USA Basketball, but... you know, without essentially it's an online course, you pay your money,
right,
and you're done. You know, how effective that is remains to be seen.
Right.
You know, so you're spot on again, spot on.
Yeah.
And then there's like the flip side where they're your biggest potential, your coaches also, because if you have a really good coach, then it changes
your life
completely the other way.
Correct. And, you know, and I just think like just – for me, like, it could end up being where, like, folks have varying, like, my perception of what a good coach is could be completely different,
right,
than someone else's perception of what a good coach is. And I think that's where that gap needs to be filled. Because, you know, I believe that the coaches that I bring in are fantastic, right? You know, and I very much, you know, use this idea of SBYD as part of, you know, the interviews that I do, and get folks to, you know, understand what it is. Because for a lot of people, they don't necessarily know what SBYD is. They don't know that it exists. And the part of what, you know, I do and onboarding and things of that nature is just making sure that I drive that idea of SBYD and what it means, you know, and at its simplest form.
Yep.
So that coaches understand that it's more than just, you know, putting W's, you know, on the board. Like, we need to understand that it's about them growing as individuals. And I think as long as coaches understand that as the number one priority, then we're set. And I think all coaches need to understand that. Like, as long as we understand, like, it's not about them, the coach, it's about the kid, I think we're going to be in a good position where coaches are going to be, you know, great across the board. But then, you know, that's where this idea of, like, pay-to-play comes in, right? So, like, if the understanding of the organization is to be elite, then they're going to do whatever it takes to win, right? Because that's how they're going to stick around. So they have to go and recruit the best players out there. So that's another kind of like gap that needs to be filled. But I just think that something needs to be done in terms of like having something structurally done, where all coaches, regardless of what level, whether it's school, whether it's, you know, competitive, whether it's travel,
just gotta rec, be a baseline.
There has to be some kind of baseline assessment.
I mean, you have that for teachers in school.
Right.
You have to be
right.
Go through all that
right.
schooling to become a teacher, and certifications. It kind of sets you like, I've learned this, I know this, I'm going to do this. But there isn't that coaching to that level.
And I know Nike came out with an online course a few years back. It's called How to Coach Kids, and I make all my coaches go through that. It's a free certification. They'll download an app, and you can kind of go through it on the app. And once you're done completing that, you have resources there like practice planning, and then just going into the SEL skills and how to embed that into practice plans. So that I think is a huge resource, but I don't think enough people know about it. I mean, I could be completely wrong. I'm just thinking about the landscape here and how I see it.
I think
if schools can adopt that and if teams can adopt that, then the buzz starts being, you know, created. And then that can be something where, you know, it can go even bigger than New York City.
Yeah.
But it's a super cool tool. I went through it. I liked it. And the fact that I can go back to it and pull
that's
up
great.
Different resources and things like that is super huge. But yeah, that at a completely... much grander scale, I think needs to be done.
Yep. All right, man, you made it to the end. Most people actually think this is the hardest question. I think it's the easiest question. But, and we've had answers from all over the place. A lot of classics and then a lot of spots I haven't heard of. But last question, and then you're out of here, is favorite slice of pizza in New York?
Got it. No brainer. Milano's, It's in East Harlem, 116th, 2nd Avenue. I've been having pizza there since I was a kid.
Wow.
And they somehow managed to continue to exist there.
Milano's on 116th and 2nd.
116th and 2nd.
And what's the go-to? Is it just classic cheese, pep?
Chicken slice. Their chicken slice is
wow.
I just always think your best pizza place, it has to be regular slice of pizza.
But is the cheese slice good? Is it comparable? But you're saying
the cheese slice is ridiculous.
Okay.
I just like, I'm.
But your go-to.
My go-to is that chicken slice. It's so good. It's a chicken cutlet that they literally just cut up for you, put it on.
Milanos?
Milanos, yep.
Got it. Milano's on 116th and 2nd. Yeah. That's our first Harlem pizza spot. So
love,
that's good.
Yeah, love that place. Grew up right around there. They actually just changed the color of their awning for the first time since I've been going there. So
updated awning?
It threw me off. I thought new people were there. I was like, oh no. But no, same guys, same nice. Crew. Same
it's awesome.
Crew. Yep.
Well, before you go, also, like, for families that are interested in applying, or where can they find you? Website, social, all that stuff. Where can everybody find
you? Yeah, so everything on our social is at We Are Dream. We're really up to date on Instagram. Our comms team does a good job of like replying to folks via Instagram. It's the biggest thing that we've been doing recently. And then our website, wearedream.org, and it'll take you through all of our programs that we have there. Registration for summer camp, because that is actually soon approaching. Kids,
ours is open.
Yeah, so our parents that are interested should do that much sooner rather than later, because we always have wait lists.
Yep.
Everything, you could go there, summer program, applying to the charter school, everything is on that site, so definitely check that out, wearedream.org. And then just like all of our contact information is out there. So and we do a pretty good job of getting back to families quick. So
awesome.
Definitely check that out.
All right. Well, we really appreciate it, man. We'll be up to visit you in Milano's here soon. And
yes.
Wish you all the best this year on all the programming you got going on. And thanks again for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it, guys. Love doing this stuff. Looking forward to connecting again soon.
Yeah, talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to Behind the Game. Make sure to subscribe in the iTunes store. And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Kids in the Game NY and Facebook at Kids in the Game NYC.